other songs on the album that they're back to back, and to me they almost feel like companion tracks, are Night Shift and Revolving Door. They feel connected to me in the sense that it feels like they're being written from the perspective of you wanting to speak to one specific person, and it sounds like whoever that person is someone who is struggling, who is going through something tough. Was that sort of the intention?
I guess on Night Shift, I'd always had a side gig as a waitress because art doesn't pay your bills, and I guess I was thinking of how I never worked a night shift in a restaurant. But I worked a lot of evenings, and I remember perhaps there were colleagues or people working with me who had children that, you know, it's difficult if you're working that kind of job and your kid is sick. What do you do? And so, you know, maybe I was also thinking about wanting to be a mother myself. Revolving Door goes back to when I was 19 years old in Toronto, and I was living in a house near Hyde Park, and it had just different rooms in it, and the room that I was in, the woman before me had thrown herself under the subway, and I used to visit her in hospital, and they would, you know, stick her in a wheelchair, and I would take her around the ward, and she was quite badly injured. And I remember the nurse saying, "Well, you can help Diane brush her hair." So kind of that's what it's about. And I don't know what happened to her. She was a very, you know, she had tried, I think, numerous times to end her life, and with each time she'd become physically more disabled. And, of course, that didn't help her want to live. And so I don't know if it's a proper thing to write about now. It's her story. I shouldn't really have told it, you know, but she's somebody I thought about a lot as a young woman, and maybe when you're in that kind of age group, the thought of those kind of dark thoughts are different than they are when you're a much older person. And I'm not saying that teenagers have a fascination with that or anything, but yes, she was certainly somebody that made an impression on me, and I was living in her room.
Thank you for that explanation. Yeah, listening to the song, I was able to get the impression that it was about someone who was struggling with depression and all the sort of like ramifications that are able to come with that, but to know it to that extent that,
you know, I hope that she really got good help eventually, and that I would like to think that she would probably be in her 70s now, and that she's somewhere thriving, but I actually don't know. I don't know her last name even, but. Mm.
just want to comb your hair, help you do what you no longer care to. You don't want me or the uniforms watching through the eyes you window. I don't know why you had to do it. Dying matches smoking. I don't know why you had to keep this feather from the bird children killed. Was I ever that cruel? Was I to you? Life looks like it's judging you. Life looks like you're guilty too. Life looks away with its wig and its watch and its cup and its cane. Says I'll meet you at the revolving door.
Another question I had about the album is, why is it called Shell?
I think that's just the name of the last track, and I'm trying to think. There was probably an album that I liked where the artist had named the album after the last track. There's probably something just as simple and silly as that. But I'm not sure. Actually, you know what? I think it was probably Kate Bush, Lionheart. The last song on that album is Lionheart, and she writes it out in her handwriting, as I have done there in the liner notes. So it was. I'm pretty sure that would have been that influence on me.
Okay, well, that works perfectly with what I wanted to know next, because I also wanted to know some of the musical influences. I think Kate Bush is someone that sounds as if you had some sort of, I guess, inspiration with her music.
Yeah, I listened to a lot of Kate Bush in my formative teenage years. I remember lining her albums up along my bed. I think, you know, she had maybe two or three out then. And there was a... I remember vividly on my 16th birthday listening to Joni Mitchell. Played her a lot. And there's a Quebec band called Harmonium. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're actually a prog rock band. They're kind of called that. And I was thinking a lot about them because the lead fellow, a guy called Serge Fiori, he died in this past summer on Saint-Jean-Baptiste, and it was he was very well mourned in Quebec, and you know, they had François Legault and all sorts of important people on the radio talking about him, and I listened to a lot of Harmonium. I think they're on Rolling Stone's top 100 of the prog rock bands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're an interesting band to look up, but and they only ever put out three albums. So I went through a while of listening to a lot of Quebec music, you know, and Diane Dufresne and Pauline Julien, and the kind of stuff that if you were a kid in Scarborough that you listened to in the 70s, I guess Neil Young, I remember, and Bowie.
How much of the album do you think, do you remember there being sort of a push and pull between some of the sort of West Coast Vancouver punk rock influences and sort of the, not necessarily pop, but, you know, Kate Bush
the
era.
Songwriter, yeah. Kind of piano ballads.
Mm-hmm.
I became aware, I think, during the process that for people working on my album, the harder, faster songs were more fun for them to play. And I don't know if those songs, for me, work as well. I think perhaps if the album had just been my piano ballads, it might have been a little bit more cohesive. And there's a few songs where I was very aware of trying to play as fast as I could, because I knew that for the guy drumming, that this was going to be really fun for him. And
Yeah, one of the earlier songs sort of has that sort of driving qualities to it. Bath, or...
Bath certainly has some sort of speed piano going on in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that one specifically having a very, like, driving sort of
instrumentation. And I was probably trying to mimic the piano playing of Mark Critchley, who was doing kind of this very speed-heavy piano playing at that time. And he has two albums under the name of Itch that came out a little bit around the same time, maybe a little bit after.
Thank you.
you do very many live performances of the album around the time that it had come out?
No. I think I did a few in Victoria, and I went to Toronto, and I think I performed at Canada Music Week, and I think my video for Mimi's Leg got played once on Much Music, or maybe it was in rotation for one day or something, however they did it back then. But there weren't a lot of performances, and I didn't have a band. And I think perhaps I wasn't sufficiently driven. I was quite shy, and you know, when you're first starting out, you're not playing to a room full of people. You're playing to a handful of people, and no matter how enthusiastic they are, it can be quite hard, you know. And honestly, I don't really know how good I was. I think if I'd had a mentor or some kind of a little bit more enthusiasm from I don't know who, perhaps I would have continued a little bit more. But I remember after Shell was completed, I did have enough songs to do another album, and I'm sad that I never actually continued on with that, but life got in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you ever record those songs?
One of them I did, and I think I have it on a cassette track somewhere. Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, it exists.
I had what I composed on. I had a Roland FP8, and that I fed into a little 4-track cassette machine. And I had a microphone and a tiny little reverb unit, and that's how I composed. And if you were composing now, you'd probably just scratch your head. I have boxes of cassette tapes somewhere of all my little bits and pieces, but yeah.
Do you still have the CD in your possession?
Yeah, I've got a couple of them.
Okay.
I mean, most of them ended up in the landfill in Guelph, Ontario. So I was very shocked to know that you even had one. And I think I had 1,000 pressed, and maybe 50 of them went out into the world. Not very many at all.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. This is quite an exclusive physical copy to have. Was there a point later on where you thought, maybe I should go back to this, maybe I should produce another album, or were you making music even just like recreationally?
I think, you know, I think the desire was always there, but when I moved to back to Ontario to do this computer graphics course, I didn't have a piano anymore. And when you sort of, your tools are not there, you don't. And I was also being a mother to a newborn, and that was a challenge in itself, even though my mother was there, you know, helping me out quite a lot. And when I moved back to Vancouver, I did for a while try to set things up and get it going, but I couldn't find my way back in. It's kind of, I'm one of these people that needs to kind of almost have the perfect environment, my own little special place or studio around me where I can kind of shut the door and just concentrate, and I didn't have that anymore. So, and I'm still hoping that space, that creative space will happen for me again. You know, I think, well, at my age, you know, I could potentially have another 10, 12 good years of creativity. You just don't know. But I have a friend in Sweden. Her name's Eva Monson. She was my roommate when I was at Emily Carr. And I go back to Sweden and visit her, and we're hoping to do something together. She is working as a sound artist right now. So, and it might not be music, it might be more of a spoken word thing, but she was she'd come over from Sweden. She'd got a vague memory that she'd been given this money from the government, and she'd, for her student loan type arrangement, and she'd taken it all, and she'd bought herself a Hasselblad camera, the kind that the Apollo astronauts had on the moon, and yeah, she took a lot of photos of me with that. So, and we reconnected after over 30 years. I went to Sweden to see her, so I'm really hoping that we will, two little old ladies, get together and do something again.
If you do, and if you ever do decide to produce music, you know, CJSF is here. We are a campus community radio station.
That's very kind of you.
This might be a tough question to answer. Do you have a de facto favorite song off of Shell?
Probably Orphan of the Pacific. Although I quite like the last one, Shell, too. Yeah.
Feel so tame on the inside, but I got balls under my skin. Sometimes it gets so empty, just like I've been shaken out of my shell. Clinging tenaciously like a handful of black kitties, clinging to grains of sun. But I won't be waltzing in slow motion for your camera, or dancing on your display shelf.
Trouble going back into this project. You know, when I first started re-listening to it, I get kind of 30 seconds in and then I'd skip to the next one and oh, maybe I can't listen to that one and stick to the next one, but yeah.
From learning that I wanted to speak with you about this album, did you go back to it?
I did. I still haven't been able to listen to all of it, everything.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm learning to kind of as I say, make friends with that younger woman. And one thing I will say is I remember how happy I was. I mean, it's a cool thing, you know, when you're creating something, and especially when it's your project and other people are coming in and contributing to it. That's a really joyful feeling. And I remember just being so happy about that whole experience, you know. There's I don't listen to a lot of music these days, but every so often an artist will catch my attention, and I don't know, for whatever reason. And there's a woman out of the UK called FKA Twigs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so she has a dance album out, which is a very odd thing for me to listen to, called Eusexua. And and what caught my attention was the word, because she's invented a new word for an emotion that she felt didn't have the right English word for it. And I remember thinking about that, going, yeah, that's I there's so many times where, you know, even making this album, that I can't really put my finger on the right word to describe the process, except that it was joyful, it was nervous, there was this kind of anticipatory, almost anxiousness about it and what it would become. But and it was a happy time in my life. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And coming here, it's sort of you wanting to, like you said, become more familiar and friends in a way with that,
yeah,
that part of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
The good, the bad, all of it.
Yeah.
Would you like to see the booklet? The photography is really interesting on all of the tracks as well.
This was all done by Miles Lowry, who is an artist in Victoria, and he's still there doing amazing work. And a lot of the artifacts and things were stuff that he had in his studio, and some of them were things that belonged to me. I still have this pair of shoes that illustrates Fatal Love. I still have the Mimi's Leg doll somewhere. But, yeah. Strange photo of myself.
And the at the very end of the booklet, too, there's this big, long thank you list of people that were involved in the album. And I always love reading those because it shows
I love reading those too. I read those to see who is involved and who is special to
exactly.
that person during the process,
because it's not just about the people that, you know, played instruments on the album. It's like thank you mom and dad, thank you to the people in my life that made this album possible just through their love and support.
And when I go through and look at them, so many of them I don't know who they are anymore and or what happened to them, but
there's a cat that's referenced at the end there.
Yes, yeah, I'm a cat person. I always have a cat in my life. Yeah, that she was a pretty special cat.
Mm.
Yeah, and I'm on my last cat now. So, got him a couple years ago, and if he lives his full cat lifetime, we'll probably go out together.
that's kind of beautiful, right?
Yeah. Like, fingers crossed. Mm-hmm.
I think that is all I had to ask of this conversation, but you have anything that you want to share.
Very kind and very, very generous of you, and it was exciting coming here today, and thank you.
Yeah, of course. It was really exciting for me as well. I'm really, really grateful that you took the time out of your day to speak with me about this piece of art that you made 30 years ago.
Very kind. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.